Welcome, Money Buddies, to this week's episode of Money Talk. This week, we're talking about feeling smart but staying poor and how to flip the script. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and let's get talking. We are here today to help you understand why you can feel smart and like you're doing the right thing with your money, but still be broke. What is it going on with our complicated financial system that keeps you from getting ahead? And a quick heads up, it's not always your fault. Sometimes it can be the system, and sometimes it can be our mindset that's holding us back. Today, I'm going to have a money talk to help us break down how we can get over that hurdle. So let's keep the train moving, but first I want to make a quick announcement. I wanted to mention today about my brand new show, Financial Planning for Young Adults. It's out right now, and you've heard me share a few episodes within this podcast feed. So if you're a young adult looking to help break down the complex financial planning topics that exist out there, I'm putting my CFP knowledge to the test to help you out. The link is in the show notes, so be sure to head over there and check out my brand new show and subscribe. But back to your regularly scheduled episode today. Today's Money Buddy is Doug Lynam. Doug's journey from Marine to Benedict Monk to Money Manager gave him a unique perspective on wealth. After 2 decades of contemplative living, he discovered that ethics and financial success are essential partners, not opposing forces. Drawing on the Enneagram, Doug helps people identify their money monsters, the deep-seated patterns sabotaging their financial goals and transforming their relationship with money from the inside out. Doug is the author of From Monk to Money Manager and Tame Your Money Monster, and he's going to help us today really wrap our minds around that money monster and give us some insight into the way we handle money within our own mindset. And today's money talking points are 1, how does avoiding money talks keep us poor? 2, how can talking about money be so beneficial? And 3, what makes money so complicated when it's really just numbers? With those money talking points in mind, let's get talking and welcome Doug to the show.
Thank you, Skylar. Happy to be here.
This is going to be a fun conversation, and I think I say that every time, but it's true. These money talks are always so much fun. It's always enjoyable getting to hear all these different perspectives and ideas and getting to apply them to our own finances. But we'll start off today with the money talking points for this episode. And for everyone listening, make sure you take these talking points and go share them with a friend or family member or coworker and have your own money talk. Some of these talking points today are going to be right in that vein of why it's important to talk about money. And I want to just start off with the first one here. How does avoiding the conversation around money keep us poor?
Well, you can't solve a problem if you're not willing to face it. And so if you're always avoiding your financial issues, then they're just going to get pushed off to tomorrow. And that's just a great way to ensure that your financial future is not the one that you dreamed of.
Yeah, there's a favorite quote that my friends and I like to throw around that there's a danger in the word someday and what it means is not this day. So if you just keep thinking, oh, someday I'll get my money in order. Someday when I make enough money, someday. It means you're never going to get around to it.
Exactly.
And same goes with asking questions about how to actually get out of credit card debt or how to invest, things like that. You're never going to get around to doing those things that are going to drive your money in the right direction if you'd avoid the conversation. How can these conversations be so beneficial, or what's some ways you've seen them be beneficial?
I think one of the problems I see with these conversations is people don't take the time to become financially literate. Finance is a foreign language in many ways. And if you don't know the basics of the language, then you don't know how to communicate and you don't know what's, you know, how to really pull your financial life together in a healthy way. So a lot of it is just sitting down and being able to learn the basics, take the time to understand the fundamentals of finance, of what I call the 4 pillars of finance, which are earning, saving, investing, and giving. And being able to have these conversations, that you can make sure your financial life is firing and all four cylinders or all four columns are well tended to, so that you can really live a life that makes your soul sing.
Yeah. And those pillars means there's more to it than just the numbers, especially with the giving one. There's a lot more impact than just the pure numbers you're throwing out there. Why is money so complicated when your bank account is just numbers? Why is it so complicated beyond that?
Well, many of us equate our net worth with our self-worth. And so when we make that distinction, we sometimes feel shame or grief or anger around our finances. We all have what I call childhood wounds. Particularly if we have trauma, money trauma in our childhood, it can create really unhealthy mindsets around it where we either demonize it or glorify it, we obsess over it or reject it for the wrong reasons, and that can drive our financial life into unhealthy ways.
Yeah, it can have a whole lot more to it than just those numbers. If you're not paying attention to that, then the numbers will get out of whack. So will your emotions and your control that you have on your finances. Mm-hmm. And that's the three money talking points for today's episode. Just a reminder for everyone. Sure, we had a quick and short conversation, but these could go in a million different directions. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to remind everyone is really dive into these with your friends and say, hey, why do you guys think talking about money is so beneficial? Just go ask your friend group after you listen to this episode and just hear the all sorts of different ideas you're going to get. Yeah. I do want to get into some more information about you, Doug, and talk a little bit about your time as a monk. We'll get into that. My first question for you is it the financial systems that keep everyone stuck? Is it a systematic issue, or what really goes into it?
Oh, that's a complicated question. The system is designed to make the wealthy wealthier. If you're not on that track, it's easy to get left behind. And certainly our systems are designed to accumulate money at the top. Hopefully you can be at the top if you put your heart, mind, and soul into getting your finances in order. So definitely there's a lot of systemic issues. It depends on where you are in the socioeconomic spectrum and how you earn your living. At the end of the day, no one's going to care about your finances more than you. So if you don't take control of them, and if you don't manage your emotions around them, then you're always going to be broke.
Yeah, you made a great point there. Like, yes, of course, there are systemic issues at play. There's things that go into trying to siphon money out of our wallets, right? There's all these marketing algorithms and whatnot that are trying to take money from you. But there are still elements of mindset and your own self-control that can help impact your finances in a positive way. How do we begin to recognize some of the pieces of our mindset that play a role in helping us not stay broke?
Oh, that's a big question. So my new book is called Taming Your Money Monster, 9 Paths to Money Mastery with the Enneagram. It turns out that there's sort of 9 archetypes of personality in the system. And it turns out there's only so many ways you can design an ego, just like there's only so many ways you can design a car. Every car is unique, but sort of the chassis of your ego, whether you drive a family sedan or sports car or a pickup truck, this is something the Enneagram can tell you. And then it tells you what your deepest sort of unconscious fear is for your personality. What were the things in your childhood that stressed you the most? Personality has many pieces to it. It has a nature, which is your DNA, and that's your gene expression, and that's fairly fixed. But then there's a nurture portion to it, which is how you were raised. The Enneagram explains the nurture portion of your personality, and then you know what these unconscious fears are for your type, and how money then that plays out in your relationship to your finances. So there's like what I call, there's 2 unique money monsters for each of the 9 personality patterns in the Enneagram system. It really depends on your personality type. It depends on, you know, how you develop maybe some unhealthy mindsets around money.
Could we maybe dive into what are some of those money monsters that you see play a role in people's lives?
Yeah, well, I'll just use myself as an example. My type is the type 3, often called the achiever or the performer. And so for type 3s, what that means is we have inside of ourselves, in terms of how we view reality, we have a deep internalized shame about how we perceive ourselves. But we also have a deep shame about how we think others perceive us. So there's a sort of stereophonic shame going on. And that creates the greatest unconscious fear for the type 3, which is having no value, being fundamentally worthless. 3s are known as achievers because we're always running around trying to achieve things to win validation and approval by, like, you know, starting the company, running the marathon, you know, writing the books, you know, achieve, achieve, achieve. But essentially what we're doing is we're always wearing masks to win the approval of the people around us. That has 2 money monsters for type 3. One is the avoidant type and one is the anxious type. The avoidant type 3 is the one who sort of, I call them the barrier, meaning they bury their head in the sand and they don't want to look at it like an ostrich. So because money brings up all kinds of shame for them, they equate their net worth with their self-worth. Looking at their finances triggers negative emotions, so they put it off and never get it done. And then on the flip side, there's the anxious style of attachment for type 3. And though the blinger type 3 may make a lot of money, but then they spend it all on stuff. They want the status symbols, the fancy car, the nice watch, the nice clothes, the big house, to try to impress people with their conspicuous consumption. When we talked before about what are called the 4 pillars of finance. So you can be anxious in one area and avoidant in another. So we've got earning, saving, investing, and giving. So you might be an anxious earner, but then if you spend all your money in stuff, you're an avoidant saver. Some people might be great at saving, but they never get to the investing part or the giving part. So that's an example how one archetype in the Enneagram system might have an unhealthy relationship to money.
Yeah, and I hope that clicks with some people in the audience that maybe recognize themselves a little bit in the way you were describing that personality type and the money monsters that they face. How have you felt it valuable just to even recognize what kind of money monsters may be at play in your own mind?
Well, as soon as you know what they are, you know how to work on them. When you know what your negative mindsets around money happen to be, then you can address them and solve the problem. You can't solve a problem that you don't know exists. Yeah. So once you know the problem is there, you can. There's some very practical strategies, which I've laid out in my book for each of the archetypes in the Enneagram. What are the strategies you need to implement? What are the things that you need to work on that are going to help you have a healthier relationship to your money?
How can someone begin to take steps in that right direction? Obviously, the awareness is a good step in the right direction, but what are some maybe other steps people can do if they want to try to counter some of that money monster mindset that they might have?
Well, I mean, again, it depends on your type, but it comes down to what the basic steps for all of them are going to be. The three steps are contemplation, compassion, and action. Contemplation is really being able to understand, know thyself, as Socrates would say, really to contemplate what the roots of your money issue are. What are those wounds in your childhood? What are the traumas you had around money that maybe keep you trapped in an unhealthy mindset around either glorifying it too much or demonizing it too much? So to contemplate on those issues, then to have compassion for yourself and for the people around you, for whoever may have wounded you in childhood to create those issues, whatever the circumstances were, especially if you grew up in poverty, right? You can have a lot of money trauma. And so being able to have compassion to forgive that trauma that occurred to you. And then the last step is taking action. What are the clear action steps you need to work on in those four pillars of earning, saving, investing, and giving in order to make sure all four of those things are healthy and robust?
Let's talk a little bit about how your time as a monk impacted your views on money. I see you have another book behind you. It says Monk to Money Manager. How did your time as a monk impact your personal finances?
Well, I spent 20 years in a monastery hoping I would escape the world of money and materialism. In an ironic twist of fate, a few years after I joined a Benedictine monastic community, our monastery went bankrupt because we all had money monsters that we weren't dealing with. We all hated dealing with money. And so if you just ignore these issues, they pile up. Over a decade or two, the community found itself in very difficult financial circumstances. And by an ironic twist of fate, it fell onto my shoulders to sort that mess out. But at least the bar was set really low. So I couldn't do a worse job than my predecessor. So I took over as the business manager for the monastery and realized that I was pretty good at it. Took the time to read every book I could find in the bookstore. And then took me about 2 years to really pull the community through those financial struggles. But then I realized that a lot of the monastery guests who would come to us with existential crises, with really big stressors in their life, would ask me to pray for them. And I'd be like, sure, happy to do that. But actually making a budget might work a little bit better. If we could solve the underlying financial issues in your life, your stress level would go down significantly. My epiphany was that most people's spiritual struggles have a financial component to them, either a direct cause or an indirect cause. And if we could alleviate that, their lives would improve substantially.
How have you seen just taking action? Like you were maybe forced into action with this bankruptcy happening in front of you. How have you seen action impact your money or the money of people that you've tried to help?
You can't, again, that's the key step to solving a problem is, you know, identifying it and then taking concrete practical steps to solve those problems. And so without action, nothing gets done. So action is the keyest, the most important step, but right action in the right direction to address your problems forthrightly.
That's a great way to paint it. It's like you got to take the right steps, but you got to take some sort of action because going back to your burying your head in the sand kind of money monster, if you just continue to do that, like it's not gonna really help you in the grand scheme of things if you just keep burying your head in your sand and your credit card debt's flying over your head and you're not worrying about it. So there's the right steps to take, but ultimately even just talking about it, like we started out with today's interview of how it can be beneficial just to even get these conversations going. How have you seen, as you've worked through your own money monsters, how have you seen your views on money change? How did it start and how are you view money now?
Well, I think I started out believing, was it St. Matthew who said, you know, the love of money is the root of all evil. I'm now in the Mark Twain camp, who said it's the lack of money that's the root of all evil. You know, he sort of humorously said, like, but actually it's not having money that's going to cause most of the suffering in your life. And so, and I think the big shift for me was getting out of a dualistic mindset around money, is seeing money as good or evil, and seeing it as simply a tool for action. It's the tool that we use for most actions in the world. And so if we don't have our finances in order, we really can't do much in life. And most importantly, we can't sort of solve the problems and fix the crack in the world that we were put here to solve. You can't clothe the naked or feed the hungry without money in your pocket, unless you've mastered the art of multiplying loaves and fishes, which I certainly have not. So you need to be able to use money as a tool for what it is. That it basically, money is a spiritual sponge that absorbs the intent of the user for good or ill.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great quote right there. I like that, that whether you want to use money in the right way or the wrong way, it's going to amplify your ability to do whichever direction you're heading in. And I like the idea there that you mentioned it's a tool. And I feel like that's kind of like an evolution of everyone's money mindset. Eventually you progress through these different philosophies. Like maybe you start out with that idea that money is evil and you're in that avoidant mindset where you don't want money because you don't want it to turn you evil. But then as you work through that, you take action and everything. I think everyone eventually gets to a point that it's like, oh, money, it's just a tool. It's no different than like a hammer for its specific purpose or any of those other sort of tools. It just has a lot broader of potential purposes. And I think that's what can make it so complex, is like you have your four pillars and that tool can help build up any of those four pillars, or it can tear them down. Like you can go in any direction with money. How have you seen that impact other people's lives when they start to recognize that money is a tool? Have you seen that maybe in someone you've helped?
Oh, sure. I mean, then you see that then their lives really start to flourish, because they're using it in a healthy way to serve themselves and their family and those that they love. So really, it's a great tool for love and service when used effectively and appropriately.
What do you think the potential is in people's lives when they use money as a tool to give appropriately? Because I think that's probably one pillar that gets overlooked often, and people tend to go towards the saving, spending, investing, and all the other areas that we can use money. How do you think giving is beneficial to people?
Well, I mean, this is just my own personal philosophy, but I think, you know, we're all put on this planet to heal the crack in the world that we were born to fix. That there's some problem out there in the world that bothers you more than it bothers other people. Whatever that is, that's sort of your calling, if you will. There's something out there in the world that needs to be repaired. And the money, when you utilize it, it becomes the medium through which you can love and serve others in a more healthy way. So finding out what that crack is and then going out there and fixing it. And with money in your pocket, you can do that. Without it, you can't do anything.
And that reminds me of an episode, it was many weeks ago, where we had a guest on talking about what is your calling, or do callings even exist? And I like the way you painted it there. Like there's this crack that you're destined to fix, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be your career or your job, because that was a big conversation that we hit on, is that many people tend to associate their calling or this crack to fix as their job, and that they have to find the work that is their calling, so to speak, right? But it doesn't necessarily have to be. You can make money one way with your job and have some passion project that you serve and work on the side, and it can be completely different.
I think your calling, it can change too. It isn't necessarily one thing, but the way to find it is, what is it that keeps you up at night, that bothers you? Like what is the thing that either makes you angry or gets you upset, or that just, you know, it's like something that's stuck between your teeth that you just can't get out, right? And that thing that bugs you, that's a good sign where your calling might lie.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really interesting point, because I was, this last weekend, I was having a hard time sleeping on Sunday night or something like that because of something that just gets stuck in my mind, like what you're saying there. So it's really interesting to put that perspective on it. We're heading towards the end here. I do have two final questions for you. First, where can people connect with you or learn more about you?
Sure. So you can find me on my website, which is my name, douglynham.com. I also work as a coach and public speaker. I'm also an investment advisor.
And of course, we'll have links to everything in the show notes that you mentioned there. But the other question that I had was, what's one thing you wish you would have known sooner about everything we talked about today if you were just getting started with money?
Well, that's what I wrote my first book for. My first book is called From Monk to Money Manager, A Former Monk's Financial Guide to Becoming a Little Bit Wealthy and Why That's Okay. And so really that was a book I wish I'd had. I really wrote it to myself, my 20 something self, all the things, the lessons that I wish I had known about the basics of how to be financially literate and how does the system work from earning to saving to taxes to investing, all those things. And so really, I think the most important mindset is finance is a foreign language. And if you don't learn the language, you're always going to be financially illiterate. And then you're going to be going through the world making unhealthy financial decisions and making mistakes that are avoidable.
That's a fantastic note to leave it on right there, Doug. I like the thing that you said there that it's okay to get a little bit wealthy. It's okay mm-hmm. to learn how to manage your money and have some money that you can do good with. And that's an awesome place to leave it on, Doug. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Skylar.
Thank you so much to Doug for coming on the show. And I want to wrap up today's episode here with a little bit more conversation around a couple questions that I had and wanted to talk about with each and every one of you. The first thing that I wanted to touch on and wrap up here is what makes money so complicated when it's just numbers? This is the third money talking point from today's episode. So please take this talking point and go have a money talk with a family member or a friend because it's going to be a good one. This is a question that can lead you down a ton of different avenues. So go and have a money talk about this one because emotions are the hard part, not just the math. We all have a calculator and we could all figure out the math and it wouldn't be that hard if it was just math. Because guess what? Like I've said before, there are supercomputers that would have this whole thing automated. The math is the easy part. It's the emotions that come with our money that make it so complicated. It's that emotion between spending on one thing and not being able to spend on another. There's no real way to get away from money. And I was thinking about that throughout the conversation with Doug. Is there any way to actually get away from having to deal with or think about money? And I don't think it's possible. Because if you want to go on a trip, visit family, get a nice meal, guess what? Money's involved. Do you want to go camping? Money's probably still going to be involved because it's very likely you're going to have to pay for the campsite. You're going to have to pay for transportation to get to your campsite. No matter how you want to live your life, money is going to be involved in some way, which is why it feels so present in our lives and always so stressful. It's not just one area of our life that gets put aside when we start thinking about other areas. It's something that impacts every area of our life. And guess what? You can't do math about feelings. You can't calculate the rate of return on emotion, and you can't calculate your interest rate on borrowed emotions towards putting it towards another area of your finances. You have no idea what these interest rates or rate of returns are going to be, or what actual interest rates or actual rates of return feel like. You don't know what market volatility is going to feel like until you're actually going through it. And I've had this thought brewing in my mind about an emergency fire drill for your investments where you can kind of play out what volatility could look like. I'm working on that episode and I'm going to likely air it on my Financial Planning for Young Adults show. So be sure to head over to the show notes, click the link to that show and subscribe. But here's a real nugget that I have found recently. Are you hiding behind your spreadsheets? Are you proclaiming to be this big old money nerd that's just hiding behind your spreadsheet, even though you're ignoring the emotions and true feelings behind your money? Maybe you're ignoring the real impact that not putting money in your IRA could mean for your cash flow. But your spreadsheet says that it has to be so perfectly optimized that you have to put it into the IRA and you don't feel like you can get around that. Make sure you're actually facing your financial emotions and your feelings rather than just trying to deal with the math. But that wraps up my conversation there for that money talking point. Let me know what you thought. Leave a comment on Spotify or YouTube. I got two more questions I want to get to discuss here with you. And the next one's going to be, is it a financial system that keeps people stuck? I think there's an element of this. I definitely have come to realize that there's these financial systems that are built up to be way more complex than they need to be. And the complexity is not accidental. These big financial companies make things complicated in order to stifle people from figuring it out on their own. And really, these companies want you to remain financially dependent on short-term loans like buy now, pay later or credit cards. And there's always going to be some new way that these companies are going to figure out how to siphon money from you, whether it's a buy now, pay later scheme that they're all integrating into their credit card platforms and payment kiosks, or if it's some sort of bigger scheme, like maybe it's whole life insurance with large commissions. These companies are going to try to confuse you in order to make money off of you. That's just plain and simple. So I do think there is an element of our financial systems that keep people stuck. And unfortunately, it happens at the most poverty-stricken levels where there's not a lot of financial literacy, which is why podcasts like this one are so, so important, so that we can have money talks and have conversations about how credit cards and buy now, pay later short-term loans are not good for you. Because if you just continue to kick the can down the road and you live your life on a monthly payment, you're going to be financially dependent to whoever is willing to offer you money. And guess what? The interest rates are just going to get higher and higher. It's going to get more and more stressful. And it's going to get harder and harder to get anything done that you want to get done because you just kick the can down the road and live life on a monthly payment. There is also a large element of inaction that keeps people stuck. You have to be willing to put your foot forward and make the sacrifices that it's going to take to get out of a challenging financial situation should you find yourself in one. So while there may be something bigger than just avocado toast, right, or those expensive drinks that you buy every morning, there may be something bigger than that in the entire system. Making sure that you're making sound financial decisions can do a whole lot more for you than any sort of big systematic reform will do. I hope that one stuck with you. Let me know what you think down in the comments. But the last question I want to talk about here is, how can people recognize that they're stuck with money? And debt is a huge one. I just talked all about how short-term loans and credit cards can really just keep you stuck. And if the debt cycle is consuming you where money just goes in and it just goes right out away to minimum payments, or if it feels like you're just in a cycle where money is disappearing as soon as it shows up, then yes, you may be stuck in that debt cycle. And that's going to be tough to get out of because it's going to take a level of sacrifice and some hard work to break through that wall that's keeping you boxed into that debt cycle. Another way to know if you're stuck is if you're constantly experiencing financial anxiety. Is thinking about opening your banking app giving you a headache? Are phone calls from credit card companies stressing you out? Well, that is enough to recognize that you are stuck. I love saying that I want to get people to the point where they don't have to worry about when payday is, because that is such a point of freedom. When you don't know if this Thursday or Friday is your payday, it completely unlocks you to worry about so many other things in your life and not worry so much about money. And that all comes from developing a system that works for you. Forget the system that's trying to keep us stuck or the systematic issues that make things so complex. If you can build a system that is understandable to you and that works for you, it'll end up making it so that you don't have to worry so much about money. Another way to know that you're stuck is if you lack clear financial goals. I've talked about over the last couple episodes or so these guardrails, and your financial goals and values can help build those guardrails so that you have an understanding of what financial independence could mean. So do you have an understanding of why you're saving and investing specific amounts? When those guardrails are in place, it makes all the rest of your decisions so much easier and keeps you moving forward with money so that you don't get stuck. Money is a tool that helps us in every aspect of our life. It allows us to take shortcuts. It allows us to pay for things. It allows us to buy things that make our life better. And if that's stressful to you because money touches every aspect of our lives, it may be a sign that you need to take a step forward and understand that there's going to be some sacrifice that is needed in order to get unstuck. But I'd be happy to help each and every one of you. I'd love to sit down for a free money talk. So use the link in the show notes and sign up for a time for us to chat, and we can figure out a system that's going to work for you. Because here's the truth, money buddies. Feeling smart with your money and actually being wealthy, those are two different things. You can be smart with your money without having $1 billion. And now, like I said, money isn't complicated because of the math, because we have calculators. But it's complicated because of the emotions. It's complicated that it touches every aspect of our lives. It's complicated because it just lurks in the back of our minds. And sure, the financial systems aren't doing us any favors, but there is stuff you can do today. You're not stuck forever. It might be your own mindset holding you back, or it may be the situation you found yourself. But first, recognize where you are. That's the biggest deal. And then you can start working towards it. So stop avoiding money and start taking small actions today. Your money monster might be scary, but it's less intimidating once you recognize it and face it. The best way to stay up to date and connected to all things Money Talk is to subscribe to this podcast. You can also find links in the show notes to email me or leave a comment on Spotify or YouTube if you have any questions about today's episode. And if you're looking to get started with budgeting, sign up for a Money Talk today, and I'd love to work with you over there and help you with your budgeting. The link is in the show notes. And if you're a young adult or know one in your life who could benefit from some great financial planning advice, check out Financial Planning for Young Adults right where you're listening to this show. And remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go and have a money talk about today's topic with a fellow money buddy. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.